This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show with Jason Hartman. You're about to learn a new slant on investing, some exciting techniques, and fresh new approaches to the world's most historically proven asset class that will enable you to create more wealth and freedom than you ever thought possible. Jason is a genuine self-made multimillionaire who's actually been there and done it. He's a successful investor, lender, developer, and entrepreneur who's owned properties in 11 states, had hundreds of tenants and been involved in thousands of real estate transactions. This program will help you follow in Jason's footsteps on the road to your financial independence day. You really can do it. And now, here's your host, Jason Hartman, with the complete solution for real estate investors.
Welcome, listeners from around the world. This is your host, Jason Hartman, episode number 695, and I am reporting to you today from Los Angeles International Airport, LAX. If there's a little bit of noise in the background, I apologize. It won't last for long because we're going to go to an interview I did on one of our Venture Alliance members' podcasts, and that is Mr. Pat Donahoe. I was on his show a couple of months ago. We talked about some interesting stuff, and I wanted to share that interview with you here as well. So we're going to do that. And before we do, I'll just tell you a little bit about my time in Fiji. I'm just heading back, waiting to catch my flight to Phoenix. Was on a 10 and a half hour flight from Fiji. And before that, of course, we had to connect from one Fijian airport to the other. And it's been a long, long journey. So I'm very anxious to get home. You know how it is if you've ever done these long flights. They wear you out pretty well, so it'll be great to get home. And it is July 3rd, and I got to tell you, the announcer on the airline when we landed here at LAX on Fiji Airways did a fantastic announcement. I wish I had a recording of it to share with you on the show, because it was really just poetic and inspiring and patriotic and nice, and it compared where we left to where we came to and talked about Independence Day and the 4th of July. And we're kind of celebrating two Independence Days, really, because, of course, we had the Brexit. We talked about that on the prior episodes. Britain gained its independence, which I think is kind of an odd connection, considering that, what is it, 240 years ago, right? 240 America gained its independence from Great Britain. So it's pretty odd, or just kind of coincidental, that that would happen like that, so close to our Independence Day. Very, very interesting stuff. And you know, I am so glad to be back home in the U.S. It is just amazing to me how the standard of living when I go around the world. Fiji was my 80th country. I've been to 80 countries. Some of those countries I've been to many, many times. You know, for example, France I've been to many, many times. Many countries in Europe I've been to over and over. It is just really incredible what Americans take for granted. And I do it myself. I'm, of course, including myself in that when I say that, because just the most basic, simple things that are adding up to create just a fantastic standard of living in the U.S., are truly, truly amazing. Now, when I talk about that, by the way, I'm talking about the economic standard of living and maybe the human rights standard of living too. I'm not talking about a happiness survey or anything like that. One would be welcome to make arguments as to what the happiest countries on earth are and how much that relates to the amount of wealth those countries have. That is certainly open for debate. I am not addressing that issue. That is a more complex sociological issue and psychological issue. But just from an economic standpoint and from a civil liberties standpoint in a lot of ways, although all of this stuff is declining and diminishing. Don't get me wrong. I'm not Pollyanna. I'm not some crazy patriot that doesn't see the problems, because we have many in the U.S. Of course, we have listeners from 164 countries around the world, so I'm just kind of making some interesting observations here. But as America is largely, I believe, in decline, it still has a long way to fall before it would lose its spot in the top countries from an economic and standard of living and quality of life perspective. Now, again, that quality of life thing could be argued in terms of happiness and, say, time and stress levels and health care. And one of the things that just bugs me incessantly is the incarceration rate in America, the way we treat drug offenses and these nonviolent crimes that I believe should be treated as social problems and not criminal problems necessarily. It's just really quite fascinating how it is when you look around the world and compare this. America scores very poorly on a lot of those things, but in so many ways, it scores so well as well. So it is an amazing time to be alive, no matter where you are in the world, because as we've talked about many times in prior episodes, technology could save us all from all the bad things that governments are trying to do, or maybe they're not trying, maybe they're just defaulting because they're so poorly managed, governments around the world, all of the stuff that they're trying to do. The question is, which force will win the game? Will technology win the game, or will idiotic government policies, government spending, debt levels, the financial criminal behavior that exists on Wall Street and other stock markets around the world, the derivatives bubble, all of these things, which one will win? That is always the question. What will be the more powerful force? And I believe human ingenuity and technology will ultimately be the more powerful force. So we will see, and we will keep discussing these issues as they play out and what they mean to us as real estate investors or investors in general. And just one more point I wanted to make before we get to the main portion of our show today, and that is the event I just attended. So I attended Tony Robbins' Life and Wealth Mastery events. It was really like two seminars in one in Fiji at his private resort in Fiji. It's called Namali. It's pretty cool. It's definitely a neat place. One of the rooms I was switched to because fortunately I got lucky in a way. My room had a leak, and so they switched me to another room, and it was an $1,100 a night room, which I can't imagine it would be worth $1,100 per night, but that's how it is in developing countries. Everything is really expensive. It's just as if inflation hit. So if you want to know what the future looks like, possibly around the world and in the U.S., as we talk about the battle between the forces of inflation, deflation, and stagnation, just look at developing countries and look at Europe, where everything is more expensive, the standard of living is lower, and that's what you have when you have less mature supply chains and more socialistic economic policies. So I'm not necessarily talking about just Fiji here, of course. I don't think Fiji's big on socialism. It's a poor developing country for sure. Certainly, you don't have mature supply chains. You don't have access to good equipment and good industry and so forth. And so that's why things are expensive. And people are always asking me, so many people at this event were asking me about real estate investing, and there were people there from 15 countries around the world, and they were asking me about, you know, should I invest in the U.S. or internationally? And again, I go back to the position that the United States has a very, very unique, very special real estate market that I cannot find rivaled anywhere in the world. Very inexpensive properties here, a very well-developed market for financing and data, meaning you have the MLS here. I had dinner with a real estate broker from Australia just the night before last in Fiji. And she was talking about how they have no multiple listing service there. And if you want to see properties offered by another broker, you go to that broker. And so you don't have cohesive data. And in the U.S., that is a very important thing. You have really good public records. You have Zillow, Trulia, Realtor.com, all of the different county recorders, the multiple listing service that give you really good valuation perspectives on properties. In pretty much every country around the world, the data is just not good. There are all these what they call off-plan developments, and you just have no idea if you're overpaying for a property or what the real value is of something. So there are so many things that make the United States a really special real estate market. Of course, the financing industry is so well developed here. Now that's, I know, funny to say, given that we were ground zero for the mortgage crisis and the mortgage meltdown several years ago, but that's not what I mean. I just mean that access to financing, it's been subsidized by the government since the Great Depression, and hey, get your government subsidy. Don't you deserve it too? Right? If you're listening to this show, I'm sure you're not a socialist. You're probably not a Bernie Sanders fan, and you don't get any handouts from the government. But, you know, you do get a bit of a handout when you get a Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac loan subsidized by the government. And even if you don't take a direct loan from them, if you go to the secondary market and some of these private equity groups offering financing, because they have to compete with Fannie and Freddie, the government-sponsored entities, they have to be more competitive. So in a way, you're still taking advantage of a subsidy. So pretty cool things. You know, the 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is just not a phenomenon around the world. That's a mostly American phenomenon, and it's a great thing. So take advantage of it with your real estate investments. So just a couple comments about the event I attended. I saw Harry Dent speak there. He's been on the show several times, and I called my guest booker from Fiji and said, hey, let's book Harry Dent back on the show again. So we're going to have him coming up. We've got a bunch of other great shows and great guests. The first half of the event was basically life mastery, and it was about mostly health. It was the first time in my life that I actually did a fast, a juice fast, and then it turned into kind of a semi-fast where they picked out all of the thin people in the room, and I was in that group, and they said, no, you have to eat. You don't get to fast completely. So they fed us these little meals where we got a little tiny piece of fish and a salad. Three times a day. That was breakfast, lunch, and dinner. But it was really tasty, you know? And when you get in the habit of eating light and eating healthy, it's really good. It's just totally satisfying. It takes about 2 days to get into that groove. And since I had never fasted before, I don't need to fast in the sense of weight, obviously, but I do need to fast in the sense of health occasionally. And if you look at pretty much every religious leader and religious book talks about fasting and the power of it. And I'm going to do, you know, I just made a commitment that every quarter, on a quarterly basis, I'm going to do a one-day juice fast. I mean, I know some of you probably do 3-day and 5-day and even longer fast than that. But for me, hey, that would be an accomplishment. So I'm giving myself that little thing. And it was really interesting to get off of coffee and sugar. I didn't have coffee for over, I think, 9 days on this trip. And that was pretty amazing to kick the caffeine habit for over a week, to kick the sugar habit. I didn't have any added sugar of any kind or anything. So I would recommend that to everybody listening. I think we all should do that once in a while, just to sort of reset our taste buds. That's what it did for me. It kind of reset my taste buds and kind of found I didn't really need that stuff as much as I thought I did. Yeah, unpleasant again for a day or two, but after that, the craving just goes away. It was pretty enlightening, really. And the mind gets a lot clearer. That's the other thing. Like, a lot of these foods we eat create this sort of brain fog. At least I noticed that. And they said, Tony Robbins was talking about how that would be one of the positive benefits you would notice is that the brain fog would clear a little bit. And I did notice that. So highly recommend that. The second part was wealth mastery. And, you know, it was pretty basic. I didn't learn a lot from it. It did not talk nearly enough about real estate. And when they did talk about real estate, they didn't talk about real estate in any real prudent way that most of us could use unless we wanted to make chasing down deals and skimming the MLS and making 1,000 offers to find that diamond in the rough that needle in a haystack property, and that's a full-time job. I wasn't too impressed with any of that stuff there, but it was still interesting. And, you know, what you realize is that's just the level of the knowledge of most people in the world. It's just very elementary when it comes to finances. Fortunately, that is not you, because you're listening to this show. Anyway, I'll talk more about this in upcoming times after I get home and have a chance to review my workbooks and my notes a little bit. But in either case, just wanted to share some of that with you. Check out jasonhartman.com for the latest and greatest properties we have. And be sure to check out hartmaneducation.com, hartmaneducation.com, for some of our courses. Feel free to connect with me on Voxer and ask questions that will be aired on the show. And that's jhart88 on Voxer, V-O-X-E-R. Just download the free app. And let's get to the main part of our episode today, my interview on one of our Venture Alliance members' podcast, and that's Mr. Pat Donahoe. So here we go.
Morning, everybody. This is Patrick Donahoe. Welcome to the Wealth Standard Radio. Man, you're in for a treat today. I know I say that sometimes quite often, but I mean it today. So I have a special guest in the office, in the flesh, Jason Hartman. Jason, you were on a couple months ago. I think it was back end of last year. But you have an event here that you're doing in Salt Lake on Saturday. Yep. And you stopped by. You stopped by and hanging out.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Pat, I got to tell you, I am so impressed with your company and your office and your facilities. Wow, this place is amazing. It's good not to do everything virtually all the time and to actually go out and see things. And, you know, we all want to be efficient and save our time. And so a lot of us are in our home office or in our commercial office, and we're not out seeing things. You know, I remember, like, in the old days, I used to go out and see people more, and now I just try to be more efficient, and so I'm doing a lot of stuff over Skype and with all the great tools we have.
And you're super efficient.
And, I don't know about that. we'll see on that one. But no, it's really great to meet your staff and your team, and, you know, just see your operation. I'm very impressed, and you're so humble, like, mm-hmm. It's ridiculous. You know, here's Pat, folks, listeners, just so you know. Yeah, I make like $500 million a year.
Whatever.
And I'm struggling.
Yeah,
that's not true, but yeah, but close. $499 million a year. Just kidding.
No, it's I love our office. I mean, it's kind of like there's an energy here that, you know, is really, it energizes me. It's hard for me to, like, sit in my home office and do stuff by myself. Right? I love being in groups. But anyway.
Well, you're a people person, and you've got a great team of people. So it's great to come here. And, you know, I worked here most of the day yesterday, mm-hmm. and I'm just kind of being your office drop-in today a little bit.
And you brought your sidekick.
Well, yeah, I brought my laptop, but I brought my dog too. And my dog is having fun exploring your office.
That was funny yesterday when she came in and just, like, took off and started running around the office. That was amazing.
She was nuts. I was so afraid she was going to break something. Everybody, I was thinking, oh my God, Pat's going to kill me. And she didn't break anything.
No, she did awesome. Yeah. She's great. Well, amazing, amazing dog. Okay, so today, you and I can talk for probably eons, which is a curse we have.
But let's give some value to your listeners. Absolutely. And let's talk about disruption. I mean, we are at this inflection point in history, I believe. And, you know, Pat, maybe everybody thought this before. Maybe everybody thought this back when the steam engine was invented, or when, you know, when they just, I guess this is not an invention, it's more of a discovery, discovered how to make fire. Mm-hmm. Okay. Certainly that's completely possible. But we are at the convergence of so many technologies right now, and attribute this mostly to the internet and the networking world. Yep. And of course, you know, the concept of the network by, who was the person? Gosh, I get that escapes me. Who invented the Ethernet? I can't think of it right now.
The Ethernet.
Yeah, which is
Al Gore?
No, it wasn't Al Gore. That was the internet.
But, oh, I forgot about it.
But actually, when, you know, Al Gore invented global warming, and then when that didn't quite work out and there were too many skeptics, he invented the internet. You know, joking, of course. But yeah, Al Gore takes credit for a lot of stuff.
No kidding.
Just,
no, but it
isn't quite true.
I can't remember. It was the open source idea was one of those things where, you know, I think it was like a, it was a mining company, and they gave kind of like the land that they owned, and they opened everything up so that people, developers can go in, and they won like $1 million prize or whatever. We have people all over the world taking the data from this mining company and showing like where the best place to mine,
story.
Right?
Yeah, that's an amazing
story. And that
story,
idea,
yeah,
I mean, look at who it's worked for. Like Salesforce has an open, you know, open backend where you can go in. There's a lot of other companies that are saying like, here it is, develop for me, right?
Well,
and they figure out a way to monetize
it. App stores, right?
Yeah.
You know, when Apple opened their app store for the iPhone a long time ago, that was an amazing change. Yep. And I recently purchased a Tesla. Mm-hmm. And I'm not, by the way, I should make the disclaimer, I'm not really necessarily a believer in the concept of the electric car, mm-hmm. but I am totally a huge believer in the self-driving car. So that's the reason I dropped $110,000 for that car. But the Tesla is about to open an app store. And so that car is really, it's called a computer on wheels. And so when I look at that screen in my car, mm-hmm. in the console section of the car in the middle, there's an app store there that they are about to open.
Wow,
and
I had no idea.
People are going to start developing all kinds of third-party apps for a car. And this is a totally new concept. And of course, the self-driving car is a giant revolution. Mm-hmm. I mean, I tell you folks, I don't think anybody has really come to grips with how big a deal the self-driving car is. Mm. And it is around the corner. This is happening so quickly. I recently moved from the Socialist Republic of California to Arizona, and I flew back to pick up my Tesla. And basically, I want to say I drove back to Arizona with the car, but the car drove me.
It drove you.
It's amazing. I mean, going around windy roads through the mountainous area in the desert at 80, 85 miles an hour, and the car is literally driving. I mean, it's freaky.
That's trippy.
It's hard to trust.
Yeah.
Only three times now in driving that car have I taken the wheel away from the computer. It's driven all the rest of the time. And it's an amazing time to be alive.
I don't know how I would
mentally
deal with it. I mean, that's a great point, because disruption has been a part of human existence, right? And there's obviously degrees of disruption, but it's always happening, and it always will happen just because of what's driving human beings. Now, the driving side of things,
it's happened pretty gradually before, though.
Now it's like exponential in a sense.
It's an exponential time, as Peter Diamandis says, mm-hmm. and it's this convergence of all the technologies with the concept of the network. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that saying from the Ethernet inventor was, the value of a network increases by like the square of each node on the network. And each node is a person connected to the internet, right? And so, like you said, the mining company that open sourced its mining operation, mm-hmm. and so many things where people are crowdsourcing investment capital, where they're crowdsourcing ideas, where they're crowdsourcing how to, you know, decode the genome. It's mind-boggling.
Yep.
And if you want to read an incredible book, not directly on this subject, but sort of indirectly, but very powerful, and she has a TED Talk too, Jane McMonagall, who wrote Reality is Broken. And it's about the gamification of everything. And Pat, I mean, it is an amazing time to be alive.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
But I was going to, and I look at, you know, being driven by your
right.
car.
Yeah.
And
I put a chauffeur out of business.
Well, the idea.
I didn't have a chauffeur.
I mean,
before,
as you were talking through that, I was thinking that, and you've talked this about this on your podcast, but when you were talking, I was like, I don't know how I would react if something was driving me, because you've been so conditioned to drive and be in control. Now,
when you're
not.
I am a control freak.
And that's the thing. And so as this disruptive technology becomes a part of society, I mean, human beings right now, they don't like, some people like change, some people don't. But I think if you really want to be able to take advantage of what's coming down the pipe as far as society is concerned, whether it's business or any type of wealth building, you need to understand change and you need to be okay with change.
Yeah, you really need to embrace change. You know, I mean, we can go so many directions with this. If you want to talk a little bit about the self-driving car, it's interesting because one of the predictions I have made, and, you know, I'm a real estate guy, okay? I help people invest in income properties nationwide. Really conservative approach. You know, we're all about income. If appreciation comes, it's the icing on the cake. But let me make a prediction on pricing and the valuation of real estate, because this is hugely important for our economy. The impacts are so wide-ranging. So the cardinal rule of real estate since the beginning of time, from the days of prehistoric humans living in caves, was location, location, location. And it still is the driving thing that drives real estate values. But if transportation becomes this sort of non-issue, if the concept of a commute becomes compressed into it being sort of a meaningless thing that doesn't really impact you, where you don't have to drive, where you can sleep while the car drives you, where you can work, you can literally do yoga while the car drives you. You know, you could do whatever. You could play with your dog, play with your kids. I'm sure people will drive around making love, okay? There's all kinds of things that this means, right? So it's a giant impact. And in the past couple of decades, there's been this new movement and resurgence in real estate markets around the country because America is really the founder of the concept of suburbia, okay? In the post-World War II baby boom generation, the suburbs became this very iconic American ideal. Levittown, baby boomers coming back from the war. The two-bedroom, not the three-bedroom usually, but the two-bedroom, one-bath house in the suburbs with a white picket fence. Maybe it was in Lakewood, California. Yeah. Maybe it was anywhere in America.
Became the American dream.
That was and that's because of the romance built around the automobile in the 50s. And, you know, fuel was cheap. Cars, America had the auto industry, you know, the world's auto industry. In fact, if you go to Cuba, where progress stopped in 1959, it's like going back to, you know.
1959.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit dirtier.
It's amazing the old cars they have there that are still held together with bubble gum and duct tape. But the interesting thing is, my prediction is that there will be a renaissance in the other direction, in the suburbs. Because living in the suburbs has its benefits, right? You know, you can have a yard and a dog and, you know, it's kind of a nice environment in many ways. Now, the three-block radius around everybody's house still really matters. The school districts will still matter to those who have children. Okay, definitely important. But, you know, do you really need to live in an expensive area if commuting is not an issue? Why can't you live 45 minutes or an hour away from your employment?
Yeah.
And maybe your employment won't even be a commute. I mean, for a lot of us, it isn't
virtual
anymore. We literally walk across the hallway to our home office. And so this is a big change. I'm telling you, I'm not exactly sure how it will play out. Nobody is, but it's a big deal. Real estate is the biggest asset class on planet Earth, okay? And this matters. The self-driving car matters. So a lot of things come into play here. Number one, what's known as packing density of cars on highways and freeways. Because the cars can be packed at a ratio of 6 times what they are now. Well, not just self-driving, but networked together.
Okay,
because when the cars start to communicate with each other,
then
why can't they drive 90 or 100 miles an hour 2 feet off each other's bumper, right? Because if one stops a mile ahead, all the cars will know to stop. Now, this is all great until somebody hacks your car or God forbid that Microsoft makes the software, because that would be a mess.
Oh, jeez.
I'm obviously an Apple fan. but the packing density matters. So that lessens the need for building new roads and highways. So much for Obama's shovel-ready myth of the jobs, you know, that he promised 8 years ago, right? And so that's a big deal. The whole idea of the commute is compressed. That doesn't become meaningful anymore. You could live in low-priced areas like Phoenix, and if you love the beach and love the ocean, your car on Friday evening at midnight, you can get in your car.
And wake up at the beach the next morning.
Yeah, refreshed at 7 a.m., and you can go surfing, you can hang out at the beach. You know, maybe it's a self-driving motorhome. It is a game changer. It's huge.
Well, I think looking, you know, again, how things are going to play out, it's probably not going to be exactly how we predict. Because you have human beings that are always behaving, reacting, and a lot of it's irrational. So it's one of those things where paying attention to this type of disruptive technology, whether it's the self-driving car, whether it's network cars, and whether it's other technology, it's going to change the way that we live. It's going to change the way that we invest. It's going to change the way that we ourselves behave. But I think all the points that you've made are incredibly valuable. But so looking at, you know, I posed this question to you yesterday because you're the real estate guru. But looking at right now, there is a tremendous drive toward living in an urban area, right?
And I gave and you. I like that, by the way. I like the mixed use idea. I love the walkable communities.
Yeah.
So I'm a fan of that.
But you made great points because you know a lot of what's driving that is a younger generation. But as the younger generation, right now they're trying to be efficient, right? Because they're starting out, they're trying to find their career, they're paying off a load of student loan debt, trying to be very cognizant of where money is coming and where money is going. But looking at as they pay off that debt, as they progress in their careers, you made a great point, which is that behavior is going to change. And what are they going to do next? And that's where suburbia, I mean, they're having the convenience. And I like this because I only live a few minutes from out of town or out of the city. But I like that because I'm close to everything. It's convenient. Okay. If I need to go here, I can do that. But you made a great point, which is.
But you live in a really expensive area. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so, like, take Southern California, where I spent most of my life in the Socialist Republic. Okay. Love to bash California. I live in Scottsdale, Arizona now, by the way, just so everybody knows. But most of my life paying taxes to the corrupt socialist government of California. And in that area, you know, when I lived in Orange County, California, I lived in Irvine and Newport Beach, two areas there. And the cheap real estate was out in Riverside, San Bernardino, comparatively.
To the west, right?
And a lot of people had to commute. They would buy a house out in Riverside or San Bernardino counties, and they would commute into Orange County or Los Angeles for jobs. Mm-hmm. And they would spend their life on that freeway, and it would be terrible. Now, that's all going to change. Do you really need to have an expensive home in Newport Beach when you can have a much less expensive home in Riverside, and that commute issue is largely gone? Now, the cost of energy is one of those considerations, but the cost of energy is plummeting. We'll see. This is a big deal, and I think it's going to put downward price pressure on expensive real estate that is based on location-heavy valuations. And it's going to put upward price pressure on lower price real estate where land has historically been less expensive because it doesn't have location going for it.
So let me throw maybe a couple other ideas or wrenches
okay,
at
throw
you.
Throw a wrench in my theory.
Because so looking at again the improvement of technology, what people are doing, it's really what is driving a person to do it, which is they want more with less, they want better, they want progress, they want the iPhone 7 and 8 and 9 and 10. And, I mean, they want the new, and for less cost. So if you look at real estate in general. And specifically real estate prices, what are some of the forces right now that are in motion that are going to be driving down, whether it's construction prices, whether it's the commodities that go into homes, whether it goes to the energy?
Great
question. What are some of those forces which will affect real estate prices and maybe even affect rents eventually?
Yeah, great question. So we've got these conflicting forces going on. Technology is quite obviously deflationary. Mm-hmm. Okay, it makes things less expensive and it makes them better. And we all know this. We don't have to, my first cell phone cost $3,200. I actually financed it as a 19-year-old kid when I bought it. And it weighed 14 pounds. Okay. And now you can buy a much better cell phone that does a lot more for a lot less, obviously. But the conflicting force with technology, the countervailing force, is government and central banks. And so as great as all this technological innovation is, the governments and the central banks really all around the world are doing their best they can to screw it all up because they create lots of inflationary pressure. And so the thing we don't understand is who will win. Mm-hmm. Which force is more powerful? Is it central banks and governments, or is it technology? And I don't know the answer. Nobody does. It's impossible to predict. Nobody could predict this. Certainly, Janet Yellen at the Federal Reserve doesn't know either. Nobody knows. But the way the government spends, as Ronald Reagan said, it was a great quote. He says, to say that the government spends like a drunken sailor is an insult to drunken sailars. So that's a good quote. So we've got those inflationary forces out there. Government spending is inflationary, no question. And then we've got the deflationary forces of technology. And, in the cost of housing, to directly attack that question,
I don't know. You know, there's all this stuff about the 3D printed houses, and yes, a few of them have been built, but they're kind of weird. The thing people don't understand is even if the construction becomes easier and faster mm-hmm. to build the house, it still uses the commodity of land, mm-hmm. and it most definitely still uses the commodity of building materials. Mm-hmm. Something goes in the 3D printer, like a petroleum-based product.
Yep, or wood.
That, yeah. Well, wood 3D printed house?
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Well, it wouldn't be all wood, but certain wood can be assembled by a robot, or it could be cut automatically by...
Well, that's not 3D printing, though.
Well, 3D printing, yeah. You can 3D print concrete, you can 3D print, you know, the petroleum-based composite stuff. But still, the assembly is going to be a lot more efficient.
No question about it.
You can't create trees out of nothing.
That's not yet. we created a meatball in a lab. Okay, so who knows if we can create, genetically engineered trees, of course, grown out of nothing into something. So we'll see where this all goes. But that the house still takes materials. And the difference between robotic manufacturing and the specific robotic manufacturing called 3D printing is that 3D printing is what's known as additive manufacturing. So it's ideal for petroleum-based products mm-hmm. because the plastic genre of materials is very good at additive, where it adds and builds it and adds to it and creates something like that. Mm-hmm. So houses still take building materials until the day when we live in a force field and maybe we come home and push a button or think a thought and our house appears as a force field around us, and it's not really made of matter.
I've never thought of that. That's definitely.
I'm going way off.
Yeah, you're way off
here,
on that one. No, but that. But again, everything you're saying again. What is initiating that? And it's really that human driving force to get better, to get cheaper, to get more efficient. But it's fascinating because you do have that opposite force, which is government, right? Or just the nature of economy. We've had this, conditioned idea that we need growth every year. Growth. And if we don't have, and growth is all measured in increasing prices, which that is not the only way to measure growth. But in the end, that's what their initiative is, and that's what they're driving toward.
When you say they, you're talking about governments and central banks.
Yeah.
Well, they have a target inflation rate dictated by what's called the Phillips curve, mm-hmm. which is, the thought that, and I'm not explaining this perfectly, but mm-hmm. go to Wikipedia and look up Phillips curve. Mm-hmm. But the idea is that the government wants to target, 2 or 3% inflation, because if they don't get that, then the economy doesn't grow properly and unemployment increases. But the thing I don't know that we should talk about on another show because it's a long subject mm-hmm. is the whole concept of robotics and what that means to employment. I mean, this is giant. And mm-hmm. folks, this is not, here is the critical thing, listeners. This is closer than you think. Yep. This is not far off. I'm talking 3 to 5 years before you see huge impacts from what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. This is not 10, 15 years away, and it's not a quarter century away. Mm-hmm. It is right around the corner. And there's another big thing that we should also talk about in the future, and that's I started about a year ago hosting a new show called The Longevity and Biohacking Show, in addition to my popular real estate show called The Creating Wealth Show. But we are on the verge, I believe, of giant advances in life expectancy. And Pat, that has such big impact on the economy, because what happens to Social Security if people live 25, 30 years longer? Social Security was designed for people to live
65, 67 years old. Yeah.
Yeah, to live 4 years after retirement, yep. okay, and then die.
Yep.
Die at 69.
Not
right?
20, or not 25, yeah, not 30.
Yeah. And so we already are struggling with that problem. Mm-hmm. Look at Europe, which is an absolute disaster. I mean, Europe is a mess. China is a mess mm-hmm. For kind of the opposite side of that problem, because they don't have enough, because their one-child policy is just going to ruin China. It's, mm-hmm. You're already seeing a little bit of that.
Well, they've gotten to the second. They allow a second child now.
Yeah, I know, but it's too late.
But it's, yeah.
It's over, game over. Huge impacts here. And so the question is, what does that mean for unemployment? What does it mean for government budgets? What does it mean for inflation and central banks and monetary policy? The impacts are ginormous. Mm-hmm. We should tackle that along with robotics on another episode.
And it's more of, and I think the reason why we like talking about this is as you look toward the future, first, as I said before, it's not going to be the exact description that we think it's going to be, right? There's always going to be different changes in its time frames and so forth. But you and I agree on a lot of things, and I agree on that. I agree it's going to be coming very quickly because the speed at which we're accelerating toward that is exponential. And so, but I always look at, okay, why is that going to happen? And what does that mean for me? What does that mean for business? What does that mean for opportunity? And if I think more people would start to ask themselves those questions, now they're going to read differently. They're going to, pay attention to certain things differently. And I think that's very powerful.
You bring a different self to the environment. And when you start thinking about all of these disruptive technologies, you think, how does that impact my business? One of the things, one of my very early mentors, fortunately, was Earl Nightingale, along with Jim Rohn, Dennis Waitley, Zig Ziglar. Mm-hmm. Those guys changed my life at 17 years old. And one of the things Earl Nightingale used to talk about is he used to say, the thing you've got to do is every day ask yourself how your business, your company, your profession will be done differently in 5 years or 10 years. And now that old Earl Nightingale thing, and Earl Nightingale died back in 1989. Okay. Mm-hmm. So this is, old thinking, he was popular in what, the 60s, the 70s, 50s even. Yeah. It was way before my time. I'm glad to say, but I still loved his work and still do. And, now that's just massively compressed and the impact is massively increased. So it's not a question of how will this impact your world in 10 years? It's how will it impact it next year and the year after? And the impact is so much greater. I mean, this is not a linear change anymore. It is exponential times. Mm. And we've got to be prepared for that. And so many people are still asking the question, who moved my cheese, right? As the famous, I had Ken Blanchard on my show. That cheese is getting moved around a lot faster now.
Well, I think that's one of the human, one of the deficiencies I think we have as humans is we come to a conclusion and we are so set in our ways and unwilling to change. It's kind of the ego side of things. So I would say, what I've tried to do lately and what I try to observe is not coming to conclusions, not saying this is absolute, this is absolute, this is absolute, is just saying, okay, well, is it absolute or could it change? And I think if people thought that way, they'd have much less disappointment. Because I think people, when they come to certain conclusions and they expect things to be a certain way and it doesn't happen, it's like life is over.
Right.
There's hardly been any type of absolutes that have occurred in throughout human history. So it's more of, because of where we're at in the state of our society, it's paying attention, it's looking for the opportunities, it's networking, it's building on that momentum and not getting stuck in your ways.
No question about it. But I don't think we should beat ourselves up too much for being that way, because if you think about it, it served us for all time until really the last couple of decades when the acceleration of change happened so much faster. Because in the old days, thinking in that sort of consistent linear way was the way the world worked. Mm-hmm. And that was our survival skill back then. But now, because things are changing so quickly, we need a new set of survival skills. And we need to not be stuck to the past. Yeah. And so it's a whole new world.
Mm. Well, that's an understatement.
That's the understatement of the century, maybe. But maybe we'll wrap this up with a great Yogi Berra quote. And he had such funny, awesomely insightful quotes. And the one I like a lot is he said, "The future ain't what it used to be."
That's short, sweet, to the point. But you're right, I don't know. I love reading. I love seeing what people are thinking. But maybe as we end, what are some ways in which you keep up with a lot of this? What are books, blogs, people you follow where you try to get you keep plugged in to? Because you're obviously, you have multiple podcasts. You're well networked. You're well plugged in. What are some of kind of like the top books or the top blogs or feeds or sites that you're consistently looking at?
Yes. Yeah, so. I think one of the most important things is that you want to really consciously choose your relationships, your friendships. And that's one of the reasons mastermind groups are so powerful. Good old Napoleon Hill back in, the 20s or 30s of 1900, by the way, I guess I better say that. He talked about the power of the mastermind group. And so you want to hang out with people who are maybe thinking more broadly than you, doing more than you, earning more than you. Don't be the smartest guy in the room. You know, constantly challenge yourself to be one of the dumbest people in the room, because that means you're in a really powerful room.
You're going to get stretched.
Yeah, you're going to get stretched. So I'd say that's the first thing. Listening to, you know, good podcasts are very important, of course. And books, gosh, I mean, the era of books is changing so much, and the era of publishing is changing so much. You know, I love great books. One that I just finished, gosh, I got to look it up on Audible to get you the exact title. This was an audio book I just did, and it, I'll get it in a minute.
Well, you, and I remember one of the first times we had a pretty lengthy discussion, we were comparing our Audible libraries, because that's sitting down and reading a book, that is difficult for me. It's multitasking, but I find a huge amount of value in being able to be active while listening to books, and that's why Audible, you know, on 2 or 3x speed is powerful.
I like to read too, but you know, it's reading is not a portable activity. Mm-hmm. Listening to audio is.
Once you have like your networked self-driving cars, then you know that.
Then you can read again. You know, the car will still bump around until it levitates, and that's probably coming too. When is the flying car going to be here? You know, I remember watching the Jetsons, and that just hasn't happened yet. So this book, really interesting. It's called Originals, How Nonconformists Move the World, and it's by Adam Grant. Really interesting book. Mm. 0 to 1 by Peter Thiel was a recent one. There are just so many great books out there. But the problem again with books, and I mean, this industry has obviously changed so much, is if it goes through the traditional publishing channels and not being self-published, by the time you're getting that book, it's 2 years old. If not older. Yep. So in a world of
podcasting is immediate, right? Podcasting, it's top of mind, tip of tongue.
Yeah.
It's the current events, it's what's going on right now.
Yeah.
Do you have any podcasts that you like listening to that kind of keep you plugged in, keep you engaged, keep you stimulated intellectually? Besides your own?
Yeah. Well, I like all my own podcasts quite well. I love that I get to ask the questions of all these experts I interview. And so I've got 21 different shows.
Oh my gosh.
You can just search my name on iTunes or whatever podcast platform, find those. So a little shameless self-promotion there. Yeah. But I like your podcast because you're a forward thinker, obviously, and I know your listeners can tell that. Mm-hmm. And I like just some of the news sources, you know, like Newser is a great little news app. Mm-hmm. I like. A really quick 2-paragraph news. Business Insider is pretty good too, but there's a lot of clickbait out there too, which frankly the title is so compelling, but then the article itself is less compelling. I'm not criticizing Business Insider. I just thought of that concept, but they do it too.
Do you listen to the Forward Thinking? The Forward Thinking?
Oh, yeah. I was going to mention that one. That would, FWD Thinking podcast. Yeah. I like that one too because they talk about technology and stuff. We've never even talked about that before, have we? But we both listen to that.
Topic for next one.
Well, that's a good podcast. I like that one. Yeah.
But I think, and there's a lot out there, and sometimes you'll gravitate toward one person than another, but there are so many out there. It's just more of finding, you know, what really keeps you engaged, keeps you interested, because in the end, I think technology is one of those things that everybody needs to start paying attention to, because it could totally throw a industry out of balance. It can throw your career out of balance. It could throw your investing out of balance. So I would say getting plugged into that, the disruption that's going to occur is definitely going to change the world. And I'm excited. I'm optimistic that it's going to, you know, it's going to improve. It's going to improve life, despite a lot of the naysayers and the doomsayers that are out there that are taking, you know, a lot of what's going on to the negative extreme and saying how the world is going to implode. But I never like to look at that.
Well, look, it's a mixed bag. Yeah. I mean, you know, everything is a mixed bag. There are always people that win and lose every time things change. Mm-hmm. But overall, I agree with you, Pat. I think it's an amazing time to be alive. That's kind of my quote for the last couple of years. It's an amazing time to be alive. Just keep up with it, everybody, and I think you'll experience some amazing things that you just never even dreamed possible before. So it was great talking with you today.
Dude, likewise, we could go on and on and on about this. So we'll definitely do it again. All right, Jason, thank you. Thanks for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me, and happy investing and embracing change.
I've never really thought of Jason as subversive, but I just found out that's what Wall Street considers him to be.
Really? Now, how is that possible at all?
Simple. Wall Street believes that real estate investors are dangerous to their schemes because the dirty truth about income property is that it actually works in real life.
I know. I mean, how many people do you know, not including insiders, who created wealth with stocks, bonds, and mutual funds? Those options are for people who only want to pretend they're getting ahead.
Stocks and other non-direct traded assets are a losing game for most people. The typical scenario is you make a little, you lose a little, and spin your wheels for decades.
That's because the corporate crooks running the stock and bond investing game will always see to it that they win. This means, unless you're one of them, you will not win.
And unluckily for Wall Street, Jason has a unique ability to make the everyday person understand investing the way it should be. He shows them a world where anything less than a 26% annual return is disappointing.
Yep, and that's why Jason offers a one-book set on creating wealth that comes with 20 digital download audios. He shows us how we can be excited about these scary times and exploit the incredible opportunities this present economy has afforded us.
We can pick local markets untouched by the economic downturn, exploit packaged commodities investing, and achieve exceptional returns safely and securely.
I like how he teaches you how to protect the equity in your home before it disappears and how to outsource your debt obligations to the government.
And this set of advanced strategies for wealth creation is being offered for only $197.
To get your Creating Wealth Encyclopedia Book 1, complete with over 20 hours of audio, go to jasonhartman.com/store.
If you want to be able to sit back and collect checks every month just like a banker, Jason's Creating Wealth Encyclopedia series is for you. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, all rights reserved. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., exclusively.